So, May already, can you believe it? And the AI, as we've already heard, is Mission of the Month, so I get to speak here this evening, and that's quite a privilege, so thank you for having me here this evening. But as I start, I will just say, do be warned, I am not a preacher. I don't have a theological qualification, and in DAI speak, at best, I am a facilitator of learning. Someone who tries to stimulate thinking, pose questions, create opportunities for people to learn from themselves and from one another. I believe in interactive learning, the chance to ask questions, the chance for discussion, the opportunity to challenge. And that is the DAI ethos. And not because it actually takes less time to prepare, it takes longer to prepare. And not because it's safer, it's actually much safer not to let your audience loose to ask questions of you, to challenge your ideas, or to work in unsupervised small groups. It's because it's a model that we see so effectively used by Jesus himself. And just think, if you would, of some of the methods he used with his disciples to facilitate their learning. Consider how often he threw questions at them to make them think, including the biggies, such as Matthew 16, verse 15. Who do people say the Son of Man is? And what about you? Who do you say that I am? Which caused Simon Peter to think carefully and then articulate, thankfully, the right response. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Think how Jesus also used stories, parables, analogies, and metaphors to broaden their thinking. The Good Shepherd, the bread of life, the light of the world. And hyperbole, if your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away, Matthew 5, verse 29. Exaggeration for the sake of impact. And that's what I'd like us to look at this evening, how Jesus empowered kingdom leaders by facilitating their learning in these ways that I've just mentioned and in so many others. But I'm very conscious this evening that leadership is a huge topic, and I'm only going to be able this evening to skim the surface. So my prayer as I start this evening is that what I say will be what the Lord would have me say, and that it will stimulate your thinking and that it will resonate helpfully with you. And I'm sorry, but you actually may be relieved that we won't have time to get terribly interactive. So if after the animated PowerPoint that you saw a little while ago, you're still wondering why DAI does what DAI does, it's because we see the huge need for effective leaders in times when we're seeing significant growth, particularly in the majority world, but sadly against a backdrop of corruption, of persecution, and of poor leadership. We in DAI also believe that we are furthering God's mission, fulfilling God's mandate, and following God's model in Jesus Christ. And I'm going to come back to those as some of my themes this evening. But for me personally, why am I passionate about what DAI does? Well, some years ago, I was watching Comic Relief's Red Nose Day. One of the stories told of the scourge of the huge number of deaths each year from malaria in Uganda. And I was sufficiently moved by the needless suffering that I pledged, some might think foolishly, that whenever I saw an advert on TV, on a hoarding, in a newspaper, or heard one on the radio, that I would give £5, roughly the cost of a mosquito net, to any organization that was campaigning to eradicate this entirely preventable disease. Fiona, my wife, and I give to WaterAid every month for similar reasons. There's absolutely no reason why anyone in our world need drink dirty water. But interestingly, as I've worked indirectly and now directly with DAI over the last 5.5 years, I've come to realize that as much as malaria, foul water, poor sanitation, trafficking, and so many other things are a societal scourge, so also inadequate and corrupt leadership is a deadly scourge, and very often
the cause of the disease-ridden society in every sense in which we find ourselves living. According to World Health Organization data, about 3.2 billion people, almost half of the world's population, are at risk of malaria. And that stat just caused me to wonder how many people are at risk of inadequate, self-seeking, dictatorial, and even just plain evil leadership. So DAI is not normally on the front line of disaster relief. Nepal is an exception, as was the 2008 Myanmar cyclone, when we did raise significant funds in the UK, and we hope to repeat that with the Nepal appeal. But we do work very happily, and I believe effectively, behind the scenes with leaders of other mission organisations, folks such as Tear Fund, World Vision, Compassion and CMS, and others that you can see on the screen, but also with leaders of churches and Bible schools, seeking to equip them for their frontline roles. And we passionately believe that every Christian has a role to play in raising up Christ-like leaders. I mentioned God's mission, his mandate, and his model just now. So let me come back to those now as we further explore how we play our part in being and in empowering kingdom leaders. Eminent theologian and former DAI UK board member Chris Wright joined up the dots, I think, for some of us some weeks ago when he preached here. He spoke of the five marks of mission. Agreed by the Anglican Consultative Council in 1984, and since then adopted by the Anglican Communion worldwide, these are the five marks of mission: to proclaim the good news of the kingdom, to teach, baptize, and nurture new believers, to respond to human need by loving service, to transform unjust structures of society, challenge violence of every kind, and pursue peace and reconciliation, and to strive to safeguard the integrity of creation and sustain and renew the life of the earth. Thankfully, Chris broke that down and simplified it into this model, encouraging us to consider our role in God's mission and helping us to see that some of us will be called to work on the front line directly, serving society by promoting justice and compassion. That's the stuff on the right-hand side of your screen. While others will be involved in building the church through evangelism, or as in DAI's case, through teaching, and that's the stuff on the left. But our combined efforts, and we all, I stress, have a part to play, serve to advance his mission, the care of creation, and the renewal and the redemption of the world. So God's mission and God's mandate, I think, are fairly obvious. In fact, Jesus spelt out the latter in Matthew 28. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age." The what, I think, is very clear. Go, make, baptize, teach. And the where is equally clear. All nations. So the issue is not what we are required to do or where we are required to do it, but how we do it. And that brings us back to this question of servant leadership. Jesus serves us that we might serve others. Jesus leads us that we might lead others and develop new leaders. Jesus modeled servant leadership for his disciples and for us. This Thursday, we'll be voting to determine who leads our country, our government. And I wonder on what basis you will decide who you will vote for. What do you expect of the future Prime Minister as our nation's leader? I'm extremely grateful for this document, the Christian Institute's election briefing, And I did find it very helpful in terms of my understanding of the key policies of the different parties. And if you haven't had a chance to read it, it's worth a read. But I have to confess that as I read it, I found myself wanting to know not just what each party pledges by way of policy, but what each leader believes and how they intend to deliver those policies. I also wanted to know what their approach would be, who Cameron or Miliband might work with in coalition, which seems the inevitable result of the election on Thursday, and why and how their personal and their party values influence that. The Prime Minister's role is to serve his country by leading the government. If you had a wish list of the values and behaviours of your ideal Prime Minister, I wonder how it would read. If we had time, I was going to get you to do a little exercise and scribble some things down and compare notes with one another. But I did warn earlier on that interactive learning takes longer, and we just don't have that. But I wonder what would be on your list, and I wonder how you would change that list if you thought about the model that Jesus gave us. How would you like our future Prime Minister to be and to behave more like Jesus? I don't know. So allow me instead to share some biblical perspectives on what effective servant leaders do. These are some of the things, and there are many more that you could add, that I believe effective servant leaders do. Effective servant leaders set the direction. And I don't mind if you call it 2020 vision, as we do here in church, mission, objectives, goals, mandate, or something else completely different. The point is that a good leader will provide purpose, a sense of direction. Jesus brought the disciples and us the Great Commission. Effective servant leaders choose the team to deliver the mission. And I think we would agree that Jesus chose what most would consider a pretty dodgy team. Just imagine the memo he might have received from the local HR consultants. I think it probably would have read something like this. To Jesus, son of Joseph, carpenter shop, Nazareth. It is our opinion that the 12 men you have picked to manage your new organization lack the background, education, and vocational aptitude for the type of enterprise that you're undertaking. Nor do they understand the team concept. Simon Peter is emotionally unstable and prone to fits of temper. Andrew has no qualities of leadership. The two brothers, James and John, place personal interests above company loyalty. Thomas demonstrates a questioning attitude that would tend to undermine morale. And we feel it's our duty to tell you that Matthew has been blacklisted by the Greater Jerusalem Better Business Bureau. And James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus have radical leanings and both register high on the manic depressive scale. One of the candidates, however, shows great potential. He is a man of ability and resourcefulness. He has a keen business mind and contacts in high places. He is highly motivated and ambitious. We recommend Judas Iscariot as your controller and your right-hand man. We wish you every success in your new venture. Yours faithfully, Jordan HR Management Consultants. So why would Jesus select such an unlikely bunch? I think the answer must be because he could see their gifts, their skills, their potential, how they would fit together, and clearly he had fantastic insight into their character. Effective servant leaders nurture, coach, and mentor their team members, meaning that they equip and encourage them to acquire new skills. To me, that's what coaching means. And they walk life's journey with them, as Jesus did with the disciples. And to me, that's the meaning of mentoring. Effective leaders spend time with their team, eating, relaxing, traveling together. Referring to John and Andrew, we read in John 1, so they went and saw where he was staying, and they spent that day with him. In John 2, we find Jesus and his disciples together at the wedding in Cana. And then later in the same chapter, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and brothers and his disciples. There they stayed for a few days. As theologian Dr. Robert Coleman said from a leadership training opportunity perspective, never go anywhere alone. Always take someone with you. Effective servant leaders value unity. The unity that Paul refers to in the reading that we had from Philippians. Being like-minded, of one mind, having the same mindset indeed as Christ Jesus, doing nothing out of selfish ambition, but rather in humility, valuing others above themselves. Effective servant leaders create organizational structures that release potential, often turning things on their heads to maximize effectiveness. In organizations where servant leadership is modeled, it's likely to be the case that those who might be seen at the head of the organization are seen at the foot, facilitating, supporting, and underpinning the work of their team. People look to a good leader as the disciples look to Jesus. They don't need a structure to make them look. They seek to release, not to control. As a DAI colleague commented to me just last week, the little boxes in which you put people and keep them under control are called coffins. Effective servant leaders sacrifice themselves in order to release their teams. They set aside their position and prestige. They take the servant's towel. They wrap it around their waists. And they take on the menial tasks that best release the team. They enable, support, and serve those who, on paper, appear to be the ones working for them. Jesus didn't wash the whole bodies of the disciples. They'd already been bathed and cleansed in the waters of baptism. But he washed their feet as an act of humble service and as an example as he prepared them to be sent to continue his work, making similar sacrifices in their own lives. Effective servant leaders send their team members out with authority. Ideally not alone, but definitely with authority. These leaders delegate both the tasks and the authority required to complete them. In Mark 6, verse 7, we read, "Calling the 12 to him, he began to send them out two by two and gave them authority over impure spirits." And then in Luke 10, verse 1, we read, "After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them two by two to every town and place where he was about to go." Effective servant leaders confront wrongdoing and wrong thinking. The evil and corruption of the money changers in the temple, Matthew 21. The hypocrisy of the Pharisees, the snakes, or the brood of vipers, as Jesus called them, a couple of chapters later. The servant leadership model is as countercultural as Jesus himself was when he walked this earth. Somehow it sounds, doesn't it, such a soft style of leadership. But servant leaders are no cowards. They take huge risks by confronting injustice and corruption, by inverting structures, by releasing people to do things that they often enjoy doing themselves or feel they could do more quickly or more safely themselves. Been there? I have. Effective servant leaders expect and accept that their team members will make mistakes, and they regard them as healthy learning experiences. The disciples, I'm sure you'll agree, made plenty of mistakes, got some things very badly wrong, but I actually doubt that you or I would have done any better. Consider Luke 24. On the road to Emmaus, he said to them, "How foolish you are and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. Jesus rebukes the disciples for their foolishness, but then he takes the opportunity to correct their misunderstanding and to explain what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. The learning opportunity is seized. Effective servant leaders break the established rules and the cultural norms. They select unlikely allies. They do things in unexpected and unpredictable ways. They mix with the wrong crowd, tax collectors and radicals, talk with Samaritan women, forgive the woman caught in adultery, and they are prepared for the consequences, the gossip, the slander, the jeers when they mix with those dodgy folk, the derision of both Jews and Greeks for washing people's feet, the pain of the floggings, and ultimately the agony of the cross. Effective servant leaders are not fools. They do stuff with a purpose. Another DAI colleague of mine in Papua New Guinea recently wrote, "It was like God sent Jesus as a secret agent to annoy respectable people and fuel the tabloid gossip business. He wasn't stupid and he understood the culture. It had to be deliberate. He could have waited a day to heal somebody, but he did it on the Sabbath in the very place where everyone who could be offended was gathered. It was almost a systematic strategy to break every rule in the book. He could have told the disciples, 'Guys, I know it's a stupid rule about washing your hands, but let's just let this one go in order to respect the religious leaders. No reason to make a conflict over the small stuff.'" And my colleague continues, 33 years of scandal is what the gossip, gospel is. It is no wonder that Jesus got butchered by the respectable people. And effective servant leaders expect and help their followers not just to follow, but to lead in their own right, modeling the same behaviors, taking the same risks, developing their own followers and future leaders, whatever the cost. So I wonder if what's on the screen is what you hope to see in our future Prime Minister. I wonder if it's what you see in yourself as a leader, or at least what you desire. Will you see God's mission achieved by playing your part in his mandate? Will you in some way empower some future kingdom leaders? I wonder what you'll do when you next see one of these. Perhaps more importantly, I wonder what you'll do when you next see one of these. As the caption says, do you see a face of superstition? We don't. We see the smile of a pastor. Do you see the face of a third world hut builder? We don't. We see a potential leader. How will you help to grow a potential servant leader, one of God's servants going about kingdom-extending business? Please pray that the Lord would show you the potential servant leaders around you. Christians in your workplaces, in the church, in your homes. And just pray that he would show you how you can invest in their lives. I believe that leadership is both a gift, a spiritual gift that some people just have in abundance, and a skill that can be developed in those to whom it comes less naturally. And there's a saying, an old saying, if you can't do, teach, implying that if you can't do something, you might at least try to teach others how to do it. I say, if you can do, teach. If you naturally get leadership, help others to get it too. How do we behave as kingdom leaders? How do we empower kingdom leaders? Mark 3, verses 13 to 15 summarize beautifully how Jesus discipled his followers into a transformational community that changed despised people into world changers. Jesus went up on a mountainside and called to him those he wanted, and they came to him. He appointed 12 that they might be with him and that he might send them out to preach and to have authority to drive out demons. Let me just read that again. It's really rich in meaning. Jesus went, that was a deliberate action, up on a mountainside and called to him those he wanted, and they came. He appointed. That's such a rich word. Think about what that means, to appoint someone, that they might be with him and that he might send them out to preach and to have authority to drive out demons. For the sake of the kingdom, let the Lord help you identify the disciples that he wants you to grow. Then appoint them. What do I mean by that? Give them some recognition. Make them official in some way. Walk with them. Be with them. Walk their lives with them. Be their mentors if they need a mentor. Be their coach if they need a coach. Equip them and send them out with authority. His authority. Recognize his mission, accept his mandate, and follow his model, Jesus Christ, so that you too can be and can help develop empowered kingdom leaders. I believe we all have leadership roles to play in our church, in our workplace, and in our homes. And we all have the opportunity to invest in the lives of other Christian leaders. And we've all been called to be foot washers. Amen.